Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nice, and this show is supported by our show partner, Lacole, who produce performance cycling apparel. This is the GC Rankings Wrap-Up Award Show for 2021 with a little bit of a look forward to 2022 as well. We've got four questions. Most successful GC rider in 2021, actual results, not hypotheticals. The top five GC riders in the world as at today, which is a bit more hypothetical. The best GC performance of 2021 and the most successful GC rider, we think, in 2022. But Benji, we're just talking about this off air. What weighting are we giving 1 week stage races, grand tours, etc.? Because for me, GC encompasses both of those, is the capability to win 1 week races, even 5 day races, as well as obviously grand tours.
Yes, and my focus there lies on as well as, and on the factor that 3 week recovery is important for GC riders in my eyes. So I think we've got a slightly different definition on it. I think you value 1 week GC races a bit higher than I do, because I see most of the GC 1 week races in the season as preparation races for the GC races that come after for the majority of the big riders. Like in an Itzulia, we had a Pogacar and a Roglic. Obviously, Itzulia is not their main target of the season. Pogacar in Tirreno is not also not his main target of the season. So people aren't necessarily peaking for those races unless they're not the best riders in the world, and they want to try and focus on a GC in a 1 week race because they don't have a GC in a Grand Tour as their main goal.
I would disagree and say that I do think Pogacar's not just peaking for the Tour de France. He has a break.
I agree.
Does altitude after April as well, and I think Tirreno Adriatico was a huge AA priority for him. Yeah, as well, and more so than, say, a Basque country. So I think, as well as UAE Tour, I think it's incredibly important for him to perform at the UAE Tour as well. I don't think he's doing good numbers on Gibraltar. He's not been at the beach relaxing in the month before that performance. Same with Adam Yates as well. So I think, yeah, some riders, like Dauphiné in particular, felt very much like a preparation this year.
Swiss as well.
Swiss was, yeah, not great in particular. But I still think 1 week races are very important, and I factor it in. So the first question, and there's no way we have a differing answer, who was the most successful GC rider in 2021? It's Pog. He won UAE Tour, Tirreno Adriatico, a stage at Basque. He also won stages at Tirreno and UAE. He won Tour of Slovenia. He won the Tour de France with three stages. It's hard to do much better than that, except for Basque, I think.
Yes, certainly. And I think that factors into a lot when it comes to like our discussions later about best GC rider as well, because obviously we're talking about most successful here, so it's more results-based. And I think I think nobody will disagree with the factor that Pogacar is the most successful GC rider this year in multiple areas, like, and it's not even like one part in the season. It's not only the biggest races, it's also the likes of UAE Tour. Well, sure, he's also the one team where they 100% want to win that race completely. Obviously, other race teams won't complain by winning that race either, but their sponsor is not based in the UAE, so that's a bit of a difference. But when it comes to the likes of Tirreno also being very consistent there, tactically clever in all the races he's ridden this year, in my eyes, and perhaps on some occasions, not optimal, but I still think that he's the most successful one.
I don't think the Tour de France gives you an automatic lock to win this. I think if I pointed to 1 year, usually though, if you're winning the Tour de France, you probably are going to win other stage races, Froome, Thomas, Bernal, Wiggins, they all won other 1 week races. The one that really stands out to me is like Nibali 2014. He won the Tour de France.
Oh my God. Don't do this to me.
He won the Tour de France, and then Dauphiné 7th, Romandie 5th, Paris-Nice 21st, Oman 12th, Dubai 17th. So I would have to look there, but I think either Contador or Froome, I think both of them crashed.
Oh my God, it hurts me so much.
But we don't, normally it is just, but I'm just saying it's not an auto lock for the Tour de France winner to win this award. I think second most successful GC rider this year, I'm going to give to Roglic just because of Basque country, but it was close between him and Bernal because I rate the Giro much, much higher than the Vuelta a España as well. Do we need to do a top five, Benji? It's Rog second, Bernal third, and then I probably would put Adam Yates and Carapaz something around there, but I don't really care. Pog is just so, so far ahead this year. Ridiculous year from him.
When it comes to the Vuelta and the Giro popularity and the performances on the road there, we're talking about the Giro being rated higher as a more important race than the Vuelta. The Vuelta being the one where the second person or the person that crashes out of the Tour de France usually tries to compete for. Do we undervalue the Vuelta because of that? Because I've got the feeling that the Vuelta often has very high competition because everybody else that rode the Giro and the people that weren't good enough or crashed out of the Tour are all joining the Vuelta.
Yeah, I mean, this year, the Vuelta, like, it had the best road performance of the year was at the Vuelta. Roglic on Covadonga, it's higher than anything in the Giro. There was lots of high-level performances in the Vuelta a España. That being said, I more weight how many guys have really targeted this, focused around it. You look at the Vuelta, it's like, okay, well, Haig broke his collarbone, didn't have time for an altitude camp, and then came to the Vuelta, and he came third. He went to the break, came third. But, you know, the Giro, it's an AA priority for those guys doing it, like Bernal, who come in top shape. And Bernal at the Vuelta, another example, Bernal coming to the Vuelta overweight. His coach said he was 3 kilos, 2.5 kilos overweight, and that cost him on some of the early climbing stages, as well as he had COVID beforehand, and that affected his – I'm not sure he's even able to do an altitude camp. So – yeah, that's why I knocked the Vuelta a little bit. It's just, it is what it is. Even though there are really, really high-level performances at the Vuelta, it's not all about the Waspa Kilo and the last mountaintop finish. I think there's a lot of other things and difficulties in a race, like how hard are they racing every day, cold conditions, etc. So the Giro is not necessarily easier to win than the Vuelta, although Roglic unbeatable this year if he didn't crash. So, yeah, do you have any... in your top five, Benji, any crazy picks? Like, is a Geraint Thomas most successful? He won a World Tour stage race. He podiumed Catalunya, and what else did he podium? Catalunya, Romandy, and Dauphiné. He podiumed 2 and 1-1. Is that a successful year or not?
I don't think it's a successful year because his main goal was not really delivered. He was trying to go for another Tour de France run, and he couldn't do it, partially because of crashing and so forth. But it's becoming a bit of a habit. And if you look at 1 week races that he did race, we're talking about most successful rider. But I do feel like the start list has a bit of an effect on that. And when it comes to these races, they were by far the best team at the likes of Catalunya, and that other race was at Romandy where he was winning. Or yeah, he won Romandy, right? Was that the one where he crashed also?
Romandy's crash, yeah, when Wyke Woods came around him and won, yeah. And Ben O'Connor also beat him because Ben O'Connor's the GOAT. But anyway, that's the least controversial one. We'll move on. But before we do, mention our show partner, Lacole, who produced Performance Cycling Apparel. Lacole have also recently launched the Lacole Cycling Club. And if you're going into Northern Hemisphere winter, there could be some rides or some group activities that you might want to join. Or if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, there's also the 250 Tempo Strava Challenge. It starts in about 5 days. If you complete more than 250 minutes of activity between the 5th and the 25th of November, you'll receive a £50 reward, which is like, what is that in Australian dollars? Infinite money for use at Lacole, as well as entry into the Lacole draw for £3,000 worth of new season kit, which is a little bit more in USD and Euro. So if you want to check out Lacole, you can check it out at www.lacole.cc. That's www.lacole.cc. Next question, Benji. This is the more controversial one. Who are the top five GC riders in the world as at this moment. I'll go Pogrog 1-2. Are you the same?
Yes.
Okay. Third, who have you got?
But why do we have Pog first and Rog second when it comes to the top five GC in the world?
Pogacar has cold weather resistance. Pogacar is better tactically. Pogacar has slightly worse TT, slightly worse peak climbing, but more consistent climbing ability and endurance at the back end of Grand Tours. So that's why I have Pog ahead of Rog.
Yeah, for me, it's also based on the three-week reliability of Pogacar versus Roglic. When it comes to Roglic's Grand Tours, we've often seen occasions where he, where he had an issue. He ended up crashing in the Tour de France. Like, we can talk about crashes a lot and say, oh, this rider crashed by accident. This, well, obviously, they didn't crash on purpose, but I mean, crashed by its own regard or by someone else's regard or an issue by someone else or something that you can't oversee. But in general, there's just a pattern that Roglic just crashes more in races that matter. And Pogacar hasn't crashed as much in races that matter, has crashed quite a few times in training, apparently, according to himself. So that's interesting. But I guess as long as he can keep it from the races and is not heavily injured, that's great for finishing a Grand Tour. So three-week reliability in general is that thing for me. That tactical cleverness also, we saw it in Tirreno as one of the examples that I love. The one where he basically just outplayed Ineos. He was also the strongest that day by far, but he was able to play with them tactically as well on Prato di Tivo, and I really enjoyed that day tactically from him. And there's also more to it where I would, if you had Roglic and Pogacar solely without a team, I would also think that I trust Pogacar more to be able to compete, because Roglic is more dependent on his team in races.
If you had Pogacar with the strong Jumbo-Visma team at the Vuelta and some crosswinds or something, or at the Tour, he would really be able to use that. I think we look at stage 7 in the Tour de France, how his team wasn't able to close the early split that was dangerous, and then he eventually did it himself. Or, you know, I'm low on Pog's team both this year and next year, frankly, particularly given that Almeida probably won't be going to the Tour. So I think
George Bennett, mate, come on, Soler.
Yeah, it's going to be great for him. Because that's the thing, Pogacar, right? If he wants a 35-minute climb and he wants to do it, he's like, okay, I can do this at 6.4 watts per kilo. Well, you want to do it at the base. So, but has he had anyone to really set that pace, that right, properly lunatic pace for him from the base, Skytrain style, like Micah and Polans have done good jobs, but they can't. They're no Richie Poor, Walt Poles sort of combination in 2015. So we've got Pogrog 1-2. Let us know if anyone disagrees. I mean, if Roglic hadn't crashed in Paris, still wouldn't change anything for me. And Basque Country doesn't move the needle for me either. But going into now our third pick, this is the rest of my top five, Benji. Current best GC riders in the world. Bernal, Adam Yates, Carapaz.
No Vingegaard. I'm surprised.
I mean, he doesn't think he's a GC leader, so why should I put him in my top five?
I've got Bernal also third. I've got Vingegaard in fourth and Carapaz in fifth. So I'm leaning more towards the three-week abilities than the one-week abilities, like we explained at the start of the video. And as a consequence, I rate the combination of Adam Yates' Grand Tours with, in some effect, his one-week race and so forth, still lower than the likes of a Vingegaard getting second in the Tour de France, beating the likes of a Carapaz and so forth. Carapaz getting third in that. I was doubting whether I would put Mas in my top five, but the combination of a second spot in the Vuelta and that, was it fifth spot or something in the Tour de France? That's just not good enough to be in the top five for me. And
he's
I know
so
that
bad in 1 week. Like so
exactly.
Bad.
Like I don't count 1 week as 100% compared to like 3 week races, but still not, it's not the same as, I don't know, Carapaz was decent in Tour de Suisse and so forth, stuff like that. So like in general, my third Bernal pick is, well, Giro, like he was competing against relatively decent climbers, I would say. Sam Yates in third week, Almeida pushing through on week 3 as well. Week 1, not really, Almeida's week. And therefore, Bernal is still a rider that was very strong there, and combined that with his abilities in the Vuelta, being very strong on those stages, like the one you spoke about earlier, where Roglic was on Covadonga as well. Was it Covadonga where they attacked? And I think it was,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And yeah, all those things combined, he's got the ability of climbing. He's surprisingly got a great TT in the Vuelta, compared to what I was expecting, at least. And it's perhaps a bit inconsistent, this time trialing, but he does look like he can manage in quite a few of the races when it comes to that time trial. Jonas Vingegaard, putting him in the top five, because if you can get him second in the Tour de France, sure, it's far from Pogacar, but it's still ahead of a lot of people, including the likes of Carapaz and so forth. And that time trial ability is a big bonus for him. And that's something that Carapaz is less at. Vingegaard has a really good time trial, and he's shown it throughout the year as well. I think he started off in the likes of a UAE, where he was still presenting himself as Chris Harper on the slopes of Jebel Hafid. And I don't know, I think all that
Let's not skip over the UAE tour. Why is he?
Okay.
Oh, he was on the wrong side of the crosswind split. Okay. But I just want to hone in on this Vingegaard. So he's second at Ask, but he was in the wheels, never had to do anything, but good TT for sure. Dauphiné, not good.
I agree.
Tour de France.
Heel injury, right?
Dauphiné? Yeah. Achilles problem. Yeah. Tour de France, still great TT, but then Grand Bornand just got absolutely destroyed.
Did he not crash on Grand Bornand as well in the descent?
Crashed like five times in the tour, I think.
Also, reliability is also a factor there, you know? So that crashing does become a factor, as like if it's a pattern, then it's a pattern, and it's against the rider.
I just haven't seen enough from him. I'd take Yates over Vingegaard. I think I've cut you off. Do you have your fifth there?
My fifth was Carapaz. When it comes to Vingegaard, slowly though, the reason that I would pick Vingegaard over Yates in this is potential. Also because, well, if I would sign him for a team, if I have the money for both of them, I'd sign Vingegaard because of the potential. The opposing factor is that you don't have the consistent results across multiple years that Adam Yates has. So I guess it's more of a bet for the future. But hey, for this list, it's mainly based on getting second in the Tour de France and doing so, beating the likes of a Carapaz, who I've got fifth on the list, and who El Jaguar de Tulcán is a really nice rider that I like a lot, and was competing in the Vuelta as well last year very, very strongly. But this year, he could in no way compete with the likes of Pogacar in the Tour de France, and the difference was very significant. Obviously,
drop the owners.
Yeah, as well. He got dropped. You're right. And in time trials, he's just not as good as Jonas Vingegaard and as a Pogacar and as a Roglic and as a Bernal. I don't know. It depends on the day, I'm guessing. His Vuelta TT last year wasn't terrible by Carapaz, but I guess it depends on the day for each of them, Bernal and Carapaz. Do you think any one of those two is better at time trial?
Bernal's got a higher ceiling, I think, than Carapaz in the TT. So, yeah, I think your top five is more than defensible. The reason I have Yates, to be honest, I think Yates could even be better than Bernal next year. I think, and I'll get to that in most successful GC of 2022 questions. Yates, UAE, on his day, second best climber in the world, probably equal with Pogacar on his day, on a mountaintop finish, 20 to 30-minute climb, sometimes shorter durations. You've got those Milano-Torino watts. They're just ridiculous. I know that's a one-day race, of course, but I think Yates moving over to Ineos was already good at UAE, second there behind Pogacar, and really put him under the pump on Prado de Tivo, and I think was stronger on than Pogacar on the climbs. He just was in a defense, had to be aggressive because of the TT, which was okay. Catalunya, good TT, and then he won that. He destroyed everyone on the on Volta 2000, like dominant performance. Basque, fourth. Then he was supposed to do Swiss, and I don't know what happened. Then there's a three-month break. I don't know what's happened there, whether it's COVID or injury or what with Adam Yates, but there's a three-month gap when I thought he was going to do the Tour de France. So comes back to Vuelta a Burgos, and then Vuelta a España. If the team car can do basic maths, he comes third in the general classification there, but they couldn't figure out how to calculate a 30-second time differential in about an hour and a half when Lopez got dropped. So he came fourth there, but I think the third strongest rider. The problem is the consistency, and I think that's why Benji knocks him. Because you look at Gamonateru, that's a bad result. To be losing 10 seconds to Haig and 30 to Bernal on a climb where it should be in his wheelhouse, maybe it's too long. I don't know, but that's a bad result, and it's certainly not his peak Wasp Aquila capability for that duration. So the endurance or which Pogacar has is the knock. I just think for 1 week next year, he'll be dominant if it's not Pog and Rog. I think he's better than Bernal in a 1 week, frankly. I think his TT as well should keep improving. So I'm quite high on Yates. Do you think I'm too high, Benji?
I don't think you're too high, because in history we saw him being very consistent in 1 week races as well. And he also got a fourth place in the Tour de France in some year as well.
16.
We were doubting about his 3 week reliability in some of the years, because he had some where he completely fell through in week three. And to be able to see two Grand Tours now where he was successfully able to be reliable across 3 weeks is something I am a fan of seeing. And I do think Ineos helped quite a bit in that. But I'm going to ask you a question that was not prepped, because I'm going to throw some fire at you for a second. We've got our GC riders here. Today's question is the best GC rider in the world and so forth. Who was the best GC rider? Who's the top three best GC riders in one-day races this year?
Pogacar. Wout van Aert. No, I'm kidding. Oh, well. Am I kidding?
Are you kidding? Second in Tirreno.
Is it just Pog, Rog, Yates? I don't know.
I guess. Yates at Lombardia, was he not beating everybody in the sprint then in the end?
He came third. He was second strongest on the climb. He made a bad tactical error in Lombardia. He came 18th at Liège. I don't know. It's a lot of these one-day riders. It's hard. Where do you draw the line? You know, is Woods a one-day rider or a GC rider? He targets GC at one-week races and
Carapaz Olympics.
Carapaz, Carapaz has to be. I like Carapaz. That's why he's fifth. I know his peak, like Wasp Aquila, is not like mind-blowing stuff, but
El Jaguar.
Yeah, exactly. He's rainy, rainy conditions. If he's at altitude, if he's on a branch above you and you're walking below and you don't see him, he can kill you. You won't even know he's there. So, you've got to respect the man. He has to meet you in my top five. And that Olympics result is indicative of that. He just raced it so smart. Not as strong as Pog or Woods on the climb. Didn't matter. And then, beat McNulty. So, Carapaz, I just don't even think the Tour of France suits him, Benji. I just think he should do Giro, really. It's just not his race, the Tour. And he still came third. And he was, last year, a couple of domestiques away from winning the Vuelta. But let us know what you think. Who are your top five GC riders in the world? For clarity, mine was Pog, Rog, Bernal, Yates, Carapaz. And then I actually have, if Dumoulin came back and said he was targeting GC, I'd put him in third, but that's not happening. Same with
prediction
Thomas.
For next year. Who do you think is going to be
the most successful?
A revelation.
Oh, a revelation.
Yeah.
I think Yates, I guess Yates, people would be surprised if he was actually contending for would they be? I don't know. That's a cop-out. Yates is not a revelation. I don't know. What do you think? You put me on the spot. I need to use my brain for once.
I don't know. I didn't prep for this. Me throwing the question at you and then realizing, okay, compared to this year, maybe Landa might revive himself a bit. Nowhere near the top five for me this year. That's for certain.
TG's getting worse. It's unbelievable. I think Evenepoel's won. There's so many doubters.
Almeida's going to put him to Giro.
Yeah, we haven't spoken about Almeida. Almeida again, I just had to go. I went more with, sometimes I like a hot take. I like to throw in someone in my top five today because of, even though they haven't got the results, but he really hasn't got the results yet, GC-wise, despite some great TTs, great climbing performances.
Mate, to the Polonia though, come on, that matters a lot.
I mean, we're not covering it next year, so that's how much it matters, I guess. I'm looking down the list. I think Thomas, to be honest, I think people think Thomas is done and maybe even, I think people think he's done. Danny Martinez, I would have said, but he's got quite sick, unfortunately. I know it's tough because I look down the list of the GC guys. I'm just like, who's got a good TT? Richie Port. I don't know. Vlasov, no, got dropped every time this year. I just don't see it. Ethan Hayter, Benji?
For GC, I'm not sure yet. Like the top mountains and so forth, I'm not sold on him. Like for the, I think Tour de Pologne he can win, but we just spoke about the Tour de Pologne and said it wasn't really relevant anymore. But hey, I don't know. I do want to ask you a question about Thomas. We know that he's been, he's not been the most reliable rider when it comes to crashes and so forth this year and in previous years. Sometimes we've got the Tour de France with a cobble stage that does fit him in the past as well, because he's been a cobble rider and he's won E3, if I recall correctly. He has been thrown into the ditch in Gent-Wevelgem as well in one of your historical videos back in the day. And yeah. And the question now is, do you think that cobble stage helps him or doesn't help him in that aspect?
I think it helps him. I still think you looked at Rowe, and I know Moscon's leaving, but Ineos, they're good on cobbles, particularly flat ones. So I think, yeah, Thomas should be good at that. I think this year the Dauphiné win, the stage win, was pretty impressive. You don't know, and this is why it's tough compared to a game like sport like the NBA, where you're seeing guys competing night in, night out. You can get a real like handle on who's good. These guys they're not racing the GC guys for sometimes like 2 months or 6 weeks before the Tour de France. You don't know how their weight cut is going, their form. Like, it's so hard to know. You don't know their mental state. And like, maybe Thomas was in the best shape he's been in since 2018. He was in a great mental state. And then he crashed in the Tour, and then, you know, the season was a wash after that. But I don't know. That being said, I still rate Thomas, but I think he's going back to Ineos. Dumoulin really is the one who I think Dumoulin can be on a TT-heavy course, still top three, still win Paris-Nice, still podium the Tour de France. Dumoulin.
He should do the Giro as leader for Jumbo.
He's got 70Ks TT.
This year they sent George Bennett, so it's not like they don't have a spot for him in the Giro team as leader.
And they dropped back Bennett for Foss, remember? But yeah, I think but then they probably want him peaking for the Tour. I don't know. Almeida's probably someone who should come through, and UAE look like they're actually going to be giving him opportunities. Evenepoel says he'll be more targeting one-week races and then going for the Vuelta. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes there. But going on to now, our best GC performance of 2021, my one is Pogacar at Tirreno Adriatico. I think it's one of the most complete GC performances I've ever seen, frankly. They had the sprint stage, then the punchy like stage that Alaphilippe won, the uphill drag on stage two. He actually came fourth in that sprint and nearly took bonus seconds. Then stage three was similar, eighth. Then Prati-Dettivo came first, and I think, was it like 6.5, something, a ridiculous performance on Prati-Dettivo, and put a lot of time into Higuita, Quintana, Almeida, like 30 seconds on a 1 week race, mountaintop finish, pretty impressive. Second, nearly caught MVDP on the rainy classics 205K stage. Incredible stage. Drop Van Aert put 39 into him. And then the TT fourth, the San Benedetto del Tronto 10K big boy TT, 1 second behind Ganna, 5 seconds behind Kung, and 12 behind Van Aert. Unbelievable performance, winning a 1 week GC by a minute on Van Aert and 4 minutes on third on Mikel Landa. So that's my best GC performance of the year.
Like, it's kind of sad, but I've got exactly the same race, and it's simply because it is, in my opinion, objectively the most insane 1 week race we've had this year. And I'd argue that the only thing that might compete with it is the first 7 days of the Tour, but I wouldn't even say that. I think that it was the best GC of the year across the board. And sometimes Grand Tours actually end up having trouble with being 3 weeks long in the entertainment level of their races. And that does become a factor in the likes of a Tour de France. We noticed that after week one, GC was basically settled, and we were hoping that something would make it more tense throughout. And the second that Pogacar showed a bit of weakness off onto it, was like the entire world was falling apart, and Vingegaard would pass Pogacar again in GC. But no. It was just people trying to hype up any action we saw, because on paper the GC was closed down, and that's something that was not the case. And it's also because it's the rock stars of the sport doing that race. We've got Pogacar, Van der Poel, Wout van Aert all fighting for that race. The only one that wasn't fighting for GC, I think, was Van der Poel in that race, because he gave up on the Prato di Tivo stage. and didn't really go for it that day. Wout van Aert was trying to see how good his GC would be if he would eventually try and co-lead a Tour de France and so forth in the future based on what he does at Tirreno. And do you think that if before the Tour de France, Wout van Aert didn't have his injury with his, I don't even know what that is called in English, but...
Appendix.
Yes, exactly. If he didn't have that, do you think that he would have been in more of a co-leader role throughout the race if, let's say, Roglic doesn't crash?
I don't know. It definitely wasn't his Tirreno level, but I do think people are sleeping on Van Aert's Prestigiativo performance a little bit. I think people remember maybe incorrectly how well he climbed at the Tour de France 2020, where really his best climbing performance was on not the last climb of the day, but when he was half dropping Dumoulin, yeah, on the Peyresoude stage, I think, stage 8. But the Tirreno Prestigiativo, you know, pulling all those guys sitting in his wheel was very, very impressive. And also, like, Pogacar had to be at a ridiculous level to win that, because
yeah,
Van Aert took 10 bonus seconds on him stage 1 because he won the sprint. And then he took loads of other bonus seconds. So going into Prestigiativo, Van Aert was, I think, how many seconds was he? Van Aert was
vaguely 30 or something?
20 seconds ahead of him. And then he would have a 12-second lead after the TT, another 12 seconds. But like, while Van Aert on that TT, which he beat Gannon by, he could other GC contenders be putting 20-25 in. And the key one is the Castelfidardo stage.
Yeah. What a stage, man. Like, it was looking like a stage where Van der Poel rode away and we'd be impressively looking at how Van der Poel was doing a solo to the line. But the way that he started crumbling in the last 2 kilometers and the way that in the second group, Pogacar was the one to attack Van Aert on that Castelfidardo uphill. Oh, and then the chase started and it became closer and closer, multiple minutes that were being chased down by Pogacar and having it finish with just like Pogacar in the background with Van der Poel crossing the line, completely done for. One of the hardest races of his career, most likely, if not the hardest. That one will stay in my mind for a very long time.
So if Pogacar puts 39 seconds into Van Aert there, which is just crazy, and if he doesn't do a huge mutant performance on... This is the day after Prestigiativo, by the way, which maybe there's a question mark there, which is Van Aert, you look at the Castelfidardo parkour, wet conditions, you're like, shouldn't you be at least toe-to-toe with Pogacar here? Maybe what he did the day before chasing Pogacar cost him. But yeah, incredible performance from Pogacar. And I don't know what Van Aert's going to do next year. We'll talk about that maybe in the Jumbo Visma preview. So now the predictions, Benji. Who will be the most successful GC riders in 2022?
Okay, my first one is Tadej Pogacar. I know it's kind of boring that it's the same one as this year, but I truly believe that the Tour de France parkour that we've seen so far is one that is written on the soul of Pogacar. The cobble race really helps him in that aspect as well, in my eyes. I think he's got an advantage there over his competitors. And just throughout, I think the only thing that I've seen as a considerable potential weakness of Pogacar, the moments where we see his face that starts to look like he's about to drop. We've seen it quite a few times, and every single time now where it's on the screen, we're able to notice that he's actually having trouble following. And we saw it in Jebel Hafid. We saw it in the likes of that French one-day race, Plouay, Ventoux. Yes, indeed. We were able to call it just before he did it. And I don't know. Plouay is a different one. That's one where he just wasn't in form yet in my eyes, because he was just coming back after having a big pause after his Grand Tour victory at the Tour de France and some other races afterwards, perhaps. But it looks like it's a combination of very long climbing with very hot conditions or hot conditions. Am I inventing that, or is that a thing that you're still agreeing with?
He doesn't like the heat. I think it's confirmed. I think so.
Do you think it's also relevant to the very long climbs, like a Col de la Loze and so forth? Long minutes in calculation. Yeah, it's only 60 minutes.
I think so, because you look at Prestigiativo, he has this big burst and then Yates is closing him and he's not gaining anymore. And the other guys are actually coming back to him. So you're right. Like, he does really, really suit that 20 to 30 minute duration. even like 2025 seems to be just the absolute perfect for him, like Petr Sud when he attacked, and yep. Calderon, and what was it?
Most likely.
Jabal Lafitte, still a good performance. Yeah, 2025 seems to be perfect for him. How long is I know it sounds crazy. I know it does sound crazy, but this is what I think Roglic, I think Jumbo Visma can still, you know, I like them for the tour next year. My first, most successful GC rider for next year is Roglic. Paris-Nice, bizarre, stage eight, still still dominated that race. Basque won the Vuelta, crashed out of the Tour de France. I think he'll be the most successful GC rider next year. I think on those 50-minute climbs, he has less of a tendency to drop off than Pogacar, actually. And I'd be interested to see what Jumbo's tactics are. Maybe they say, okay, we've got a 45-minute climb here. Let's actually really steadily hard pace this today, rather than, I think Pogacar likes to snap off, start doing his pace on 7%, and then you're in a very difficult situation like we saw at Lombardia. So I've got Roglic, Pogacar, Evenepoel, Yates third. Roglic, Pogacar, Yates, Evenepoel, Almeida.
Ooh, Evenepoel, I'm liking that idea. I want to see what happens at the Vuelta next year, but I do want to see him evolve in those one-week races again in the same way that he did pre his Lombardia crash and so forth. By the way, I think you were in your head asking the size of Col du Granon. It's 11.2 kilometers, so it's a bit short for a 45-kilometer climbing performance, but the climb beforehand is the one where you're perhaps thinking, okay, it might be that, and is that not the stage where they also do Galibier just beforehand?
Yeah. And we've also seen Col de la Loz is where Roglic put Pogacar on a fair bit of pressure.
Is it altitude or length in time?
Both the undulations. I don't know. Like, Lopez won that stage. It's a literally one data point. But Roglic was stronger than Pogacar there. And he's got Kuss, who was strong on that stage. So, yeah, I think I do like Roglic a little bit more at altitude, I think. But we'll see probably Lopez winning the Granon stage next year or Galibier. I don't know. I'm going to change my mind. I have Bernal ahead of Almeida. Like, I was trying to be hot takey, but come on.
I don't.
Because the TT for Almeida, the problem is Almeida's TT, it's not that great over like 15Ks.
I agree, but when it comes to like the competition in GC riders, we're talking about riders that are going to the Giro that are not Roglic and Pogacar. So we have to compare to everybody else. Evenepoel also doesn't go to the Giro on paper, which means that he's likely competing against the likes of, I don't know, is Haig going there? Probably Tour de France, I'm guessing.
Hey, Haig's not doing the Giro.
Okay. Landa? Gino Mader?
Landa will probably do the Giro, yeah. Landa will do the Giro again.
What would Mader do then?
I'd send him to Tour de France as co-leader with Haig.
Okay. I would probably agree with your theories because they worked well together in the Vuelta, and that's a winning or a successful team that you shouldn't be switching around too much. But I think he's not going to be competing against the biggest TT riders, is what I meant with Almeida at the Giro, personally. And I think that he's getting more experience over the years. Yes, sixth in the Giro was not as top level as fourth in the Giro in 2020, but I don't think we can get much conclusions out of that 2020 Giro, to be honest, these days. I rate Almeida quite high. I don't know if I've got a solid top five in my list here, but I'm very much looking forward to the successfulness of him at the Giro. I do see Almeida podiuming the Giro. I'm not sure about winning it per se, but podiuming would already be considered successful in his progress compared to previous years. And then we look at a Mars. What can he do better than this year? And I'm like, okay, second in the Vuelta is probably a ceiling.
His Vuelta performance was really, really good, but he just was so bad for the rest of the year, apart from like the last stage, mountain stage of the Tour de France, and like he was dropping hard on the day before that. I know Movistar have got in some, I think, better. Did you say even Velasco from Astana's gone there? Where'd you see? I didn't see any. Is that confirmed?
I spoke to him about it in DM. So unless he's pretending to go to Movistar, he's
So he's the architect behind. Well, I think we think. Astana having much better TT this year. Lushenko Izaguirre at the Dauphiné. Vlasov's TT Aramburu. Way better. Aramburu nearly won the Vuelta Prologue TT. So, yeah, I think him at Movistar and their those guys have been underperforming in the time trial relative to the power they've been putting out. So hopefully he will help them there and Mas can do even better. I finally figured out who my breakout star is for GC. Oh. It's Nielsen Paulus.
I didn't expect that name at all. I feel like Nielsen Paulus is the guy that we've seen become really decent at surprising people in one-day races. And we saw it in the World Championships. We saw it in the likes of San Sebastian, which he won. Now, sure, San Sebastian is a relative Mickey Mouse race compared to the other one-day races, but it's still a very good performance. And honestly, won't know if he would have won if Honoré didn't ride into a wall halfway to the descent, but I still find it a strong performance. And what is Paulus's time trial? Because I swear it's relatively decent, right?
His UAE Tour time trial was pretty shit for a guy of his size, to be honest.
Top 25 Tour de France TT.
Yeah, he's got to work on that TT. But he came fifth at UAE Tour. I'd like to see him at Basque Country. I think he'd go pretty well there, given that he won San Sebastian. So I'm like, well, if you can win San Sebastian, you can do well in the 6-day version of San Sebastian. So maybe that's a bit of a hot take. I don't see him like competing for the tour, but I like what EF are doing. I like who they're putting around. The problem is, smartly, that EF probably think, okay, well, we've got this really talented guy. He can maybe come seventh at the tour, or we can go for stages with Chavez, Simon Gau, and James Shaw, who they just signed in Paulus. And I kind of agree with the latter option, going for stages, really. And they've got like a young Colombian as well, Daniel Arroyave, who wasn't very good this year, but it was interesting to see how he goes. So have I given you the chance to say your top five, Benji?
I don't have a select top five. I just named a few riders, so you're going to have to live with that, I'm afraid. But when it comes to like a revelation for the season, I also don't have this rider where I've got in mind that he's currently not on the radar and he's going to pop completely onto the radar. So perhaps by the time we reach our team previews, I'll have someone in mind and I'll definitely talk about it.
I can't believe you haven't said it. I can't believe you haven't said it.
Oh my God, as a Belgian?
You didn't say Carlos Rodriguez for your breakout GC star. You've been on that hype train. I like George Steinhauser at EF.
I don't think
year.
I want to hype him up completely for the first year of him potentially going to the Vuelta. Because like, I would expect him to go to the Vuelta based on his age and based on his performance and so forth. I would love for him to break out completely. Okay, I'm jumping on the high train. Fuck it. Carlos Rodriguez is going to win the Vuelta in 2020. Nah. Top five?
I think he could. He's pretty damn good. I like
top five Vuelta.
I like George Steinhauser a lot. I think he's pretty good. He's a pretty smart guy as well. But maybe it's a bit early to be saying that. The guy who really everyone should be watching and UAE's talent development. I'm not convinced it's fantastic, is Andres Camilo Adila at UAE. This guy won Baby Giro 2019. He's 22. He took a four-year deal at UAE. This year he did Lavenir. He got spanked by some guys. And that's at 22, younger than him. Carlos Rodriguez is younger than him. And then I don't even remember him doing a good pool, let alone. So he's an example of someone not progressing particularly well. I'm interested to see what happens with him and Almeida. I know Rubio's good, but he's very small. Are you concerned? Betrayal, I don't know where he's going. Bahrain don't seem to think he's like good, which is kind of confusing to me. Yeah, I know. Like, they didn't send him to the world, so he's just fucking mad. Are you concerned about Almeida going to UAE in terms of like the he or she drop off at UAE? And really, the team is. Team's not very good outside of Pog, let's be real. Like, he hard carries that team.
Yeah, and I think that's why they want him, because we were first considering that he would be support for Almeida, but based on what he's saying, that he's going to the Giro and the Vuelta, it seems like their goal is to sign riders to expand the width of the team and not necessarily the width of their Tour de France team, which I kind of like, because that shows that the team is not only interested in winning the Tour de France, but also interested in, well, Tour de France and UAE Tour, and also interested in other races. And Therefore, perhaps he can be a gateway into competing into more one-week races than the ones Pogacar is competing at. And then the question is he going to have a drop-off by leaving the Koenig and going to UAE? I am not sure the Grand Tour support at the Koenig was incredibly high either. I do believe he had decent support in 2020 Giro, but that's a completely different story. And this year, I feel like his mental pressure of getting his agent getting shit on the day before the Giro and so forth, that rivalry with Remco, it's all unhealthy when it comes to you trying to be a leader at the Grand Tour and trying to be a leader of a team. And I think that mental pressure might be relieving next year. So perhaps that counterbalances any effect that we are expecting from going to UAE.
Yeah, I think de Koenig's not like the best GC setup either from what I've seen so far. I mean, Cattaneo is just like a steady improver. I don't see him, like, I really like him, but he's, you know, he's 31, although Caruso, like, big improvement in his 30s too. So, but yeah, Cattaneo, Masnada, I do like. Masnada is as well a bit of a later developer. Like, he only joined Quickstep halfway through last year before the Giro d'Italia, and then his Lombardia performance was really good, and then he abandoned the Giro this year. So he's really good. I don't know, not like a breakout star level. But, yeah, that's the last question I have, Benji, here actually on my list, which I haven't told you about, is will Ineos, this time next year, will we be talking about an Ineos rider as the most successful GC rider of 2022. What's the pathway for that happening? They've brought Roger Hammond now over. He's confirmed going back to Ineos. Ellingworth went back at the start of this year. The problems in the Vuelta from, I don't know anything, but just from my perspective with Jason Bernal, what's the possibility of that happening? Is it just one of Pog or Rob crashes out of the Tour and then they use numbers and what, they somehow win the Tour de France? Or do you think they can actually resume their ascendancy their dominance that they had in the last 10 years?
I personally don't have that belief currently that we're going to be talking about that next year based on what we're seeing right now. But what needs to change is that they need to find a effective way of handling Pogacar and Roglic when they are riding at their peak. And right now, with their leadership that they currently have and the tactics that I've seen in 2021, I would not see that as a possibility yet next year, and perhaps they find it, but I currently don't see it coming based on what I've seen so far. But then again, who am I to say that? I don't have a clue what to do with their team to win those races either, because in all honesty, if I would know, then they would be paying me a lot of money to know it. So
why would they pay us many days to listen to the pod for free and then just I think they need Yates TT to improve a bit more, and he can't be doing that well as a TT performance, because that's the thing, you know, if he has a Almeida level TT or Master level TT, then he comes to the welter. And but I think, yeah, Bernal, my biggest concern for them is, and this is what happened this year, they kept pairing riders that both had bad TTs. And
also riders that countered each other in their abilities, like a Yates and a Bernal in the way that they rode the Vuelta, Yates putting Bernal into pressure by having to attack all the time. That kind of stuff doesn't work.
Exactly. And I think Danny Martinez, they've had also a lot of bad luck. I mean, I don't feel sorry for them, but they've had bad luck in, like, Danny Martinez. He's got a better TT potential, although he can't descend. You know, he's not looking as good, and we have to wait to see how he goes. Richie Porte, third at the Tour de France, like, what, 10, no, 12, 14 months ago, and then Tour de France, don't know what happened this year, although he won. Did win the Dauphiné, and his climbing performance there plus TT was very, very high level. But yeah, like, Port, are they going to get him? He doesn't seem to want to focus on Grand Tours. I don't know. I don't know what's happening there. Maybe he wasn't happy. Thomas, again, big question marks. And these are the TT guys I'm talking about who can be like Thomas plus Carapaz, both in good form, is a good combination. Or Thomas and Bernal. Well, is it? I don't know. Tirreno Adriatico didn't work too well in Prati di Tivo. That's the thing. The tactics, as Benji alluded to, they picked kind of the wrong stage for the 1-2 action, which was like a run-up and smash mountaintop finish, 25-minute watts per kilo test. It's like, Thomas and not putting Pogacar under pressure on that. It's Castelfidardo stage that you can use numbers a bit more effectively the next day. So that's something they've got to figure out. I'm sure that's why they got Hammond back over. But whether they can, whether there's anything you can do, I'm not sure. Because if you can't do the Watts and you get beaten in the TT, you're kind of fucked.
Yes, indeed. But the rest about the Ineos talk will follow in the team previews. The next couple of weeks, we will focus on the award shows like we are doing at the moment. And towards the end of November and start of December, right, is when we start our team previews for every single one of the teams.
We put it out on Twitter on @LanternRougeCP. That's where those sort of updates go. Thanks for listening. As always, we hope you're enjoying this. Let us know particularly whether you disagree. Make sure to give us a 5-star rating on Podcast Players plus a roast. And we'll see you in a few days with the best time trials tours of 2021. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.